Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Monday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen, Dennis Dick with you this morning. Two biggest stories on our radar, looking at CAT earnings and the disaster over in Brazil regarding Vale. Those will lead our show, but we'll, of course, take your questions from our chats on YouTube and premarket.benzinga.com. Our guest today, 8:35, is going to be Craig Johnson, Managing Director and Technical Market Strategist at Piper Jaffray. Always a great guest to have Craig on. He always has good charts for us to share with you. Joel, what's the word here in the Sunday night session?
We're red. We've been red since that 6 p.m. opening. S&P's down 13 and a quarter handles. Just great setups all over the place. On Friday, we tried to take out the high of the move. We missed that by five handles. So our major resistance stands up at the high of 26.77.75. Coming back on the downside, right now the pre-market low was 47.75. Folks, if we're going to bounce, we're going to bounce from right here. This is a big number based on the weekly numbers. So holding 26.50, green skies ahead. We don't hold that off the open. I think we work our way back into the lower part of last week's range. We have crude in the red by a dollar here at 52.69, trying to hold on from that vicious rally that started in mid-December. We have gold, big move after hours on Friday, snuck over 1300, but is now giving away that psychological level. We'll have to drill down for the technicals in gold. Silver in the red, by less than a penny here, just about a penny at 1569. Triple D, how you doing on this this Monday morning?
You know what? It's kind of quiet, actually. I mean, we do have a big move in the overall market, but there's not a lot of earnings here this morning. There's not a ton of news. It's just a little bit of macro movement here. Everything kind of moving together. It's deceivingly quiet. You think, you know, we're down 11, 12 handles. Like, oh, it's going to be a wild Monday morning. But I'd say the opposite. I'm thinking it's quiet here this morning. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great, man.
How was the weekend? Oh,
fantastic.
I like that positivity.
Yes, I'm really fired up for this week. This is going to be a great week here on pre-market prep. We got our extended tech coverage coming up at 9 o'clock with Jeremy Newsom. Anxious to see what kind of trades he has under the radar. Good moving in the markets. I like the technical setups here. Even got a little workout in this morning before the show. So I just, went over and did a little weightlifting.
Weightlifting, Joel, bodybuilder now.
Yeah.
What do you do when you do your weightlifting? What kind of exercise are you doing? I used to be into that weightlifting a little bit when I was younger, a lot of years ago, before my back got bad. What do you do?
Not heavy weight. It's more machines, resistance training, 20-25 minute power workout, eight different stations. Yeah, work up a good sweat. Get me going.
Stuff. I've tried to get back into multiple times, but I'll get it back into for a week or two and I throw my back out. So
it's hard.
I actually had a Smith machine in my home. I went and bought a Smith machine. You know what that is with the big, and I could do everything on it. I had the click weights. I basically had a gym in my home because I went to the gym for years when I was younger, from 20 to 30. I went to the gym and then I decided I got into an argument with a guy at the gym over my rate. And finally, I was like, you know what? I'm going to buy all this stuff and put it in my home. And I did. So I made my whole room into a gym. And I used it for years, too. But I'd say over the last 10 years, I haven't used the weights as much, because every time I get on the Smith machine, I'll get into it for a week or two and I'll throw my back out. So anyways, so I guess my weightlifting days are over. That's why I started trying to run a little bit more, trying to do the cardio a little bit more. I guess the weightlifting days are over for me.
Okay. All right. Well, we got a lot of stocks to cover here. I guess let's go U.S. first, and then we'll cover Vale. But Cat goes flat here. Not good for the market, Spencer. No. What did they deliver to the street?
They delivered a bad EPS and a bad sales print. Q4 just EPS, $2.55 versus a $2.99 estimate. Sales 14.3 versus $14.33 billion. So a slight miss on the sales. Big miss, though, on the Q4 EPS. The fiscal year EPS guidance also coming in mostly light. The estimate was at the high end of the range that they gave. So big EPS miss for CAD, and that is your driver here this morning.
Stock down. It's bounced off the lows a little bit here. And if you bring up the pre-market chart, we can see it's just starting to try to find some life here. But it's kind of been a slow leak ever since the report. I mean, it was 130. It was actually trading up ahead of the report. So everybody's speculating, oh, everybody's been beating so far Caterpillar B2. Speculating wrong. I mean, it even had a good day on Friday. So everybody's leaning the wrong way on this thing. Now it's down there. It's trying to hold kind of the low from January 17th. There was two, three lows there within a week of each other, right in the low 129s. That's like the first support area. That's what it needs to hold. The next level, probably 127 before that, whoosh down to 120. But, you know, this mentality, this market, buy the dip. We saw the buy the dippers coming on Friday in multiple stocks in the chip sector here. So I'm not selling anything in the hole because you've been punished selling stocks in the hole. What we mean by that is stock trading down 5, 6%. I'm not selling it short and chasing on these things, because buy the dip mentality is in this market still. So I'm not saying come in and buy the Caterpillar dip, but I'm not selling it either.
Nice run up. I mean, this is just not good for like the overall economy, right? You know, the building, the manufacturing. So this is not, I mean, this gives the more the recession fans something to cheer about when you get some slow earnings. I'm sure a lot of it has to do with China as well. Let's see here. We'll go one number only. I know Dennis likes that. Went from 116 to 142. Holy macro here. So that's 32, 26 point move. 13 of that takes you back 129. 130, that's exactly where you traded. So let's see if the bulls can step up here at 129, get it going back north here. And that'd be a level I would keep on an eye on for the close as well.
Is knocking down stocks like deer. We know deer and cat, people pair trade those things together. Deer is trading down almost 3 points there in the pre-market. So that's your direct. And there's going to be a lot of other sympathy moves here too. But deer is the biggest one always. Best bid's down at 156.56. Joel, give us some quick technicals on DE.
It doesn't, I mean, it will move off it, but it's hanging up here. It's only down 355.
That's a pretty big down move though for, they didn't do anything. This Caterpillar reported just because they sell the same, you know, similar equipment. So I think it's a pretty big sympathy move. I always say I've kind of got my own. It depends on the sector, obviously, and how correlated they are. I mean, you get Wynn Resorts and Las Vegas Sands are very correlated. Mm-hmm. But I always kind of do like the 3-to-1 rule usually when I'm doing a cat deer. If cat's reporting and it's your leader, usually you'll see, the Caterpillar move 3 times as much as the deer. So if cat's down 6%, typically deer will be down 2%. We know how I like to do the stat herb. So a lot of these stats are in my head, but there's guys that track the stuff there too. Bright Trading does a great job tracking some of this stuff. And in some of these correlations really do hold. So I've always said, you know, if you're going to be, you know, long or short and you want to hedge against it, you kind of got to do, you know, 3 times as much deer to make up for the cat. Some people will just go hedge with straight out with deer 1-to-1. You can't do that. You've got to be more on the sympathy play. You've got to have more shares of those if you want to stay hedged. But deer is getting a move, and it's right in line, really, to me. 5.5 down, 1.5 or almost 2% down. That's pretty much in line with the 3-to-1 rule there on reporting.
All right, I'll just stick with simple technical analysis on this one, too. Low of the move was down at 136.16. You popped up the 166.19. Nice 30-point move, 15 of that. You add that or subtract that from the top. That takes you down to the 150, 151 area. So that's where my bids would be if this continues to go lower. It's still a good $6-7 away, but retracing part of that move, and that correlates with the 129 and CAD here. So a lot of people are going to be wishing they had sold this on Friday. Resistance, oh boy, 159.87. So you got a chance at a gap fill if you get anywhere near the $160 area.
So we're going to have a big earnings week here, and we're going to get into those just in a second here. But let's just recap what else happened over the weekend here, because we got some disaster here. apparently with Vale, V-A-L-E, can see it got hit on Friday. It really continues to get hit here this morning. Tell us about this disaster, Spencer, and what's going on.
Right. So Friday was when they had a massive disaster at one of their dams or collapsed at a mine that they own. Over 50 dead, 300 missing, not expected to find. They didn't find any survivors yesterday. So it's the death toll is only expected to rise on that. That was the original news. And over the weekend, they got hit with some other stuff. So they suspended their dividend and their buybacks. They had assets frozen by the government as they investigate. The AG has said she's going to investigate. And they've gotten, in conjunction with that, a half dozen or so downgrades this morning as the street kind of catches up to the headlines here. So not good things happening for Vail.
Ugly here, and again trading down. This is a stock that I sometimes nibble into this thing. I don't know why. It's fairly active actually over here, so you get a pretty liquid market in it. But I don't know. It's kind of, you know, you got a big disaster here. You don't know what the liability is going to be. I kind of got like, you know, a little bit of PCG thoughts going on in my head. Not that I don't know anything about this, but I mean, we saw what happened when PCG had the original disaster. It gets hit, and we know, you know, here we are a year later, 2 years later from the original fires. And, you know, they're talking about bankruptcy. Now, we don't know anything, way too early for Vail, but the point being, I don't think I want to be the first person coming and buying this thing when there's a potential, you know, unknown liability going to come at them for a disaster. Thoughts, Joel? Do you agree?
How can you get involved on the log side here? Unless you really know something that, you know, no one else knows, and boy, it got hit more.
They suspended the dividend, they suspended buybacks, suspended bonuses. This is exactly what PCG did. And that was when PCG was, you know, in the initial, you know, couple days after, PCG was like a $60 stock still, $55 stock after the, you know, going back to 2017. So it feels like deja vu a little bit there. So we don't know how bad this disaster is, but I don't want to be the first person in.
Okay. This stock had a big range on Friday too, for some reason. I don't know when it started, but
it started Friday.
When did it start?
It started on Friday. The mine collapsed on Friday.
Yeah, you can see the move. You see the big move on Friday. So obviously, you know, you can actually go to the intraday chart. You can see the time really. You know, you're talking about, I don't know, like what it would have been, hour after the open. That sound right when the mine collapsed, Spencer? Because that's when it really started getting slammed.
Yep.
15 to 14 consolidates and 14 to 13 comes back up 13.50. Now it sounds even worse over the weekend. It's down at 12.31. So, you don't want to be the first one buy on these these disasters that are caused by these companies. So we've got precedents here. They can get hit harder.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious. I'll give you the pre-market low. Your pre-market low this morning was made right after 4 o'clock open. That was at 11.01. So you do have a nice bounce of a buck and a quarter. That took out the recent lows in the move at 12.55. So you're hanging out there. There was a double bottom there. So if you're looking for this thing to hold, it should hold in at 12.55. Yesterday's range, 12.85 low, 13.66 close. But what seems a little bit different than this one is they're just coming out and saying, yeah, it's our fault. You know, we're responsible.
Did they say it's their fault?
Acting is not what I said.
I mean, PCG kind of acted that way too. They cut the dividend early. Go back and look at the Benzinga calendar. It's nice Benzinga tracks all that. They cut that dividend very early too. They slashed it. I remember the preferred. They slashed all the preferred dividends too. Very, very quickly.
Let's see. How quickly did PCG cut that dividend?
Pretty fast. Like at the 2017. I feel like it was before even the 2018 stuff. I feel like it was 2017.
It was December 2017. Wow. Yeah.
Very early.
Very good.
That's, you know, it's all reminding me too much of PCG. And we're not saying it's going to be another PCG, but I don't know that it is. That's why I'm out. I saw what happened with PCG, and no, thank you. I'll back off on Vail. Wait till the dust settles, and, you know, maybe at the end. I mean, you had the BP. Remember BP, too? You know, and this obviously was just the oil spill that went on for a long time. And it was the same thing. If you go back to the monthly charts, BP had the oil spill, and it just continued to leak and continued to leak and continued to leak. For what felt like an eternity, obviously went from and I don't know, over $70. We got to go back a lot of years. What years was that BP oil spill? Man, the years fly by when you're getting older, because that's a long time ago now, but I can remember it. Was this back? And I'm just trying what to go to the like, decade. Was like, here.
I don't even remember. Was that 2010?
I can tell you.
I think it was 2010.
Yeah, it was. It was.
It's 8 years ago? That feels like not even yet. Oh, man, the year's flying by. I'm getting old here,
9 years, Dennis. It's 2019 now.
Another year just flew by. Just like when I was talking to the Sets. I can't even keep track of these years anymore. Anyways, you can see from 60.
What NFL was that? Like
$26, $27. So if you were early on that BP, you actually, if you were early and buying it the next day, you never got your money back. It took a long time, 5 years before you ever got back to 53, but it's never come back to 60. So it's never come back to the level where it was originally at before the oil spill. So, you know, yeah, it came back. And yes, you know, they obviously recovered from this, but the stock has never come back to where it was. It was $60 on the Gulf oil spill. And it obviously went down to the 20s a couple months later. And it, yes, we bounced, but we never got back to 60.
Well, it didn't help that CNBC had those underwater cameras.
Oh, yeah.
Remember? Of the pipe.
It leaked just forever. How are they going to stop it? Just
and then
leaking.
And then they had the gallons thing, you know, like, you know, the meter going of how many gallons actually spilled into it. So that didn't help things either. But natural disasters are tough for investing.
Not even natural, like disasters, not even natural, disasters caused by companies, that keeps the stock price down for a long time, at least in these cases here. So we'll find out, but I don't think you have to hurry into invest in Vail here. I think I'd let the dust settle on this one if it was my money.
Yeah, and to make matters worse on this, the AG, who's promised to investigate, she noted that there are 600 mines alone that are classified as being at risk of rupture. And of course, Vail, being a mining giant, owns the majority of those mines. So we'll see what happens with this one going forward. I would
scary. Scary. Terrible, terrible disaster. Scary for the shareholders.
Horrible disaster. So, all right. 8:17.
One merger, and then we'll move back to the earnings calendar.
Okay, the merger this morning, I believe it's a merger of equals. TCF Financial and Chemical Bank are merging. TCF shareholders are going to receive about half a share. It's 0.5081 chemical shares.
Well, give me the exact ratio. I write this down for my rest.
0.5081.
Okay, so 0.5, so a half. Okay,
that's what I said.
Well, I want the exact. Okay. And they're going to receive that of CHFC. Yes, so we can go now directly to CHFC. It's trading at 45.60. So we can tell you the TCF should be trading 0.5081 times that at the time the merger ends. So, you know, here we are. We're 22.50, 23. So it's right there. Not a lot of. You know, not a lot of premium being paid here. Both stocks getting a little bit of love, both stocks trading higher, but these stocks will now be kind of married going forward. So you risk arb traders, you got another one to trade.
I'll just say historically, I have seen, there's been a few other banks that have done this, and one of them was the good old Monroe Bank and Trust, that I've mentioned that before, and they've had the initial surges, but I haven't seen them hold. So I'm not sure what, you know, potential synergies are here. If I was trading this from a technical standpoint, CHFC had a pre-market high of 46.62, couple highs in a 46 handle, and now we are linking. So I'll keep an eye on that. And then for the TCF, that's trading up as well. I'm sure that's come off. That's a little bit off its pre-market high. Pre-market high in that was 23.25. Volume seems to be going to the other bank, though.
Let's go to the earnings calendar. This is a huge week. So like we said, today is quiet. Tomorrow, it's going to start getting in a lot of big companies coming in. So tomorrow morning, we can get Verizon and Pfizer and Lockheed Martin and Biogen and Allergan. So some of your biotechs reporting. And then tomorrow night, we're going to get Apple and AMD as well. So big reports tomorrow night, eBay. Wednesday, we're going to get Facebook and Tesla and Alibaba and Microsoft and AT&T and PayPal and Visa and Boeing and Qualcomm and McDonald's, all kinds of them on Wednesday. Fun week for reporting. Thursday, Amazon, General Electric, MasterCard. So you got a ton. And then Friday, we're going to get the two big oils, Exxon and Chevron. Joel, so many companies reporting, so many nice setups. We know we like to usually buy stocks ahead of the reports and like right before and then sell them right before because of 2-3 day run up that they sometimes get ahead of the report. We did get that on a few stocks here, but what do you think? Here we got Apple. Nice love on Friday with the overall market. That was its first good day. Down with the overall market here this morning, not surprising. Would you be buying Apple, you know, for a little pre-earnings play?
I don't know. I'm really torn. I mean, they really have walked it down off the last report. So, I mean, if it was a little bit closer to the low of the move, maybe. But I don't know. Also, I'm sure the options are real jacked on these things as well. So, I don't know. I think I'd rather, I mean, I always, you know, like to add it long term. I haven't done it. I'd prefer to wait it out after the report. It's setting up technically pretty nice since it's interesting because I like to mark the events and when they had, when they cut the guidance on the phones or whatever, and it actually made a low that day and has steadily come back and run into problems at 158. So that's your resistance. Trading down today. If it did get a big sell-off today, then maybe that'd be interesting, but it's come quite a bit off the low.
Just, you know, thinking, and it is down here $1.50, I might be more inclined for the next 2 days, not holding it through the report. Obviously, I'll be holding my long-term investment shares through the report, but sometimes I like to get down dirty and hold for a couple of days. It would have worked, man, if you were buying it Thursday night and saying, I'm going to buy this for the 3 days ahead of the report. And a lot of times it seems to be the sweet spot when you're buying them about 3 days ahead. A lot of times when I'm doing that, though, I like to sell, you know, the S&P against it, SPY against it, or the Qs against it, in the case of Apple, to eliminate the market risk. Because, you know, you could have a case where the market falls 5%. Well, if Apple only falls 3%, you'd still pick up 2% if you're doing the hedging. So I like to eliminate the market risk when I'm doing all, I like to eliminate the market risk when I'm doing everything. I stay usually market neutral when I'm trading. But I mean, if you're just trying to extract the alpha of a positive, you know, expectation move ahead of the results for Apple, if you're just flat out buying the stock, you're getting hit here this morning because obviously, you know, the market is down significantly. You would be getting hit here on your hedge as well because Apple's down more than the QQQ, but not that much. You'd be obviously cushioned a little bit more. So anyways, just my thoughts here. I like it always ahead of the report. So from a relative strength perspective, I also feel like we had, you know, we know the numbers aren't going to be fabulous because they did do basically an earnings warning. What was it on the second, you know, when they were given the sales projections for iPhone, right, Spencer?
Yeah, that was
refresh our memory.
Second or third of the month. No, it's where they warned that iPhone sales would be weak.
Yeah.
First time in whatever, 11 years they've done that.
Right. So we know that. So I think expectations a little bit lower here. Maybe that helps too. I'll be holding my long-term investments through the report. I won't hold any trade through the report though.
Isn't it kind of seem like the same, you know, same theme we were talking about with Apple for a long time, like another revenue stream, you know, I mean, it looks iPhones, you know, eventually the cycle running out. This is supposed to be a down cycle. People don't want to pay $1,500 for a phone. We've talked about, you know, Apple TV, Apple Watch. I mean, does anybody talk about that anymore? That doesn't seem like it was a big, you know, a big
Kramer
success.
Kramer was talking about it quite a bit.
What'd he say?
Well, you had Tim Cook on there on Mad Money, what, about a week and a half ago, or maybe it was before, actually. It was the days fly so far. But in the last month, you had Tim Cook on there, and they were talking about that they think, you know, the Apple Watch is going to be revolutionary for health perspectives. You know, where, you know, you obviously have a lot of people tracking their health through their watches, and the Apple Watch is going to be able to do all that stuff and maybe more. So Tim Cook was really talking up the watch. So I just have one of those little, what's mine? Mine's a Garmin. So I have that for the running, just to track, you know, how you're running. I like to track my heart rate when I'm running because my one buddy who's a runner says when you're running longer distances, not that I'm a super long runner, but I've been trying to run 4 or 5 miles when I'm running. He says you shouldn't have your heart rate over 150 for prolonged periods of time. So at my age, so I try to track my heart rate. So I kind of pace myself. When my heart rate starts getting like 155, 160, I slow down a little bit. If it starts getting down to the lower 140s, I speed it up a little bit. So, I mean, everybody's focused on health a little bit more. And obviously, the Apple Watch can do all that stuff too. So I wouldn't say it's just throw it out. You know, the Apple Watch is useless. But obviously, we know they're big drivers still, the iPhones. And even my wife having a conversation with her sister last night, I was just overhearing it. And they were talking about the new iPhone X. And the sister's on the 6. And my wife, I think, is on the 8. And she's just saying, like, why do I need to upgrade? I mean, what is really, you know, what's the big, you know, what's the big thing that I want in the X? And I mean, okay, it's a little better camera, but really, you know, there's not that much that, and this has been the argument for iPhone for a while, there's not that much to really encourage you to upgrade, because it's not like there's something revolutionary in the new next version of iPhone. That's what they need to come up with. They need to come up with some stuff that's going to make people want to upgrade sooner than they have to.
When one of my watches breaks or, you know, goes down, I'm gonna get an iWatch. I think that I know people use them in the pool, tracking their health, and you also can talk on your phone and everything. So that's gonna be who knows how long it's gonna take for my next watch to break, but definitely interested in getting one here. S&P futures continuing to leak here on this Monday morning, folks. No bounce as of yet. We're down 17 handles, 46.75, your pre-market. That's your last trade. We're at 46 and a quarter here. So as of 8:26 here, no one is stepping up to buy the futures here. Cat hanging out in the 129 handle, just just redness. Now, no one, as I said, no one willing to take the spoos over 26.50 as of yet. Friday's low. We got a ways to go, folks. That's 26.34.50. So, if in fact we drop another 13 handles, we will give back all of those gains from Friday.
I want to look.
So
at-
back. Take us.
Yeah, no, I want to look at PCG here, because this pre-market chart today looks a little similar to the pre-market chart that we had on Friday here. And, you know, since we had that pop there, we've sort of just spent the last few days leaking on this one.
I mean, you've got the company saying we're still going bankrupt. This is like the weirdest bankruptcy I've ever seen. Because I've said this and I'm going to say it again, it's still pricing like there's going to be some type of last minute, you know, heroics here or something. Not so much the common, but if I even go look at the preferreds here again, I brought this up when PCG was $4. And I said, it doesn't look like a stock that's imminently going bankrupt. And I look here and like you got the PCGA preferred trading $18. And you got the 1590 on the E. And some of these are straight up preferreds. They're not even like traded bonds. You got to watch. Sometimes they're traded bonds. They obviously have a right, you know, on a liquidation, but they're going to be behind, you know, the bondholders, the preferred holders. So in the case of a bankruptcy here, they're pricing like when you're 15, you know, 60% of the value still in there on the preferreds, it's telling me that something else is still cooking here. So I don't, you know, it is leaking. And yeah, you would think if it's going to go bankrupt or they're going to go, that the shareholders eventually, the shares are going to eventually be worthless. But the preferred market's still telling me something else is, that this isn't imminent here yet. So I'm going to just, you know, keep, you know, if you're shorting at 11.77, you're being rewarded this morning, it's $11, but you never know. Like there could be that last second Hail Mary, which we obviously saw, you know, 3 days ago when the stock went from $7 and doubled. So there's still risk and sure something that could potentially be going bankrupt.
A lot of different ways to play it. I think what you've had over the last couple of days is just by big players that just kept on buying this thing, you know, and buying it and buying more, and just waiting, you know, trying to get, let's say they got their average cost under $10 finally. And they're like, well, the first sign of any good news, man, you know, we're over our average price. We're just dumping. We don't care what the hell happens with this company. We just have a huge position. We want to get out of it, and we're going to use the good news to get out of it. And that's exactly what happened. If you hard to trade it technical because there's just so much fuzzy fundamentals going on, but you did basically have a 10-point rally off the move. So the $10 area is a 50% retracement. We'll see what happens there today. But once again, with so much, you know, headlines and risk like that, technicals are not as a big a factor here.
I'm just trying to look up and, you know, I'm just looking at some more details because the Pacific Gas and Electric 6% preferreds, which obviously have this dividend suspended. They were suspended back in 2017. I'm just trying to see non-redeemable. These look like normal preferreds. Like they don't look like they have, you know, any bond characteristics to them. You got to watch them. Like I said, sometimes the preferreds are traded bonds and then they would have an actual right before, you know, the first to get paid. But this looks like they're going to be behind the bondholders to get paid. So like the PCG PRA is trading at $18.83. The par on that is $25. I mean, what's up? is this, you know, maybe the bore is a real test. People aren't short them. But if I was long this thing, like, and you knew bankruptcy was imminent here, is it 20? Yeah, the par is 25. I mean, this isn't priced like it's going bankrupt. Like, I can tell you, you know, when you look at the JCPenney preferreds, and we did this comparison a couple weeks ago there, and it's a good exercise, you know, to compare. Look at the JCPenney preferreds. Look at, you know, PFH. That's trading at 30 cents on the dollar. So here you've got a preferred of PCG trading at 70 cents on the dollar, and JCPenney is trading at 30 cents on the dollar, 8 on the 25. So, I mean, this is how the market prices stuff that could, and JCPenney said nothing about bankruptcy. So they're pricing PC, like JCPenney has a better chance of going bankrupt than PCG. So I don't know why. I don't know why it's priced like that. I don't know why the preferreds are holding up so well. Maybe there's just a lot of assets here. Maybe the preferreds are going to get paid out.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. I don't know the industry well enough. Maybe if they're, but they're not doing a chapter 7. It's 11, right? So they're not necessarily going to be closing shop, or are they? So I guess it depends on, you know, how everything goes down. But right now, it's pricing like the preferreds are going to get some money.
I mean, there's a lot of income still coming into the company, right? I mean, California does need electricity. So the assets of the company, who knows? I mean, they could file bankruptcy, then, you know, the stock ends up higher, you know, as well. There's, when you break down the assets here. So,
well,
a lot of
you know, you got to have a lawyer coming in, and obviously your accountants coming in and seeing who's going to get what. So there may be something left for shareholders here at the end of it all. I don't know. But it's still pricing like there's not, you know, as much. You know, if you think this is all going to zero, all these preferreds are going to zero, the market's telling you otherwise. That's,
okay.
That's all I'll say.
All right, Dennis, what about imbalances here? We're 2 minutes past the point. S&P's just had pressure on them this morning.
Some big ones here. Morgan Stanley, and Morgan Stanley has been in the doghouse ever since it reported, really. I know it bounced there on Friday, but, you know, it was obviously one of the disappointing banks to report, and there's been a seller in there. Morgan Stanley, 236,000 to sell here this morning, MS. And if you look at the pre-market, it was trading at around 42.63. Now, well, it didn't really trade at all. It did trade down to 42.55, right on that imbalanced data there, which puts it down 1%. Goldman Sachs, it got hit a little bit on its imbalanced data there too, that just came out at 8.30. Stock was trading right in the 199s, and now it's actually in the 198s because it's got 101,000 to sell as well. So Citigroup, 40,000 to sell. Bank of America, 49,000 to sell. Somebody's a little bit excited here this morning with some sell imbalances in the banks. General Electric, good day on Friday for it. Again, snicking its head back up above $9. Seller remains 123,000 to sell. We've noticed, and we've noted a seller in the mornings there for a long time. Alibaba, 49,000 to sell. I sold half my Alibaba. It's been quite the run up there. I bought in the low 140s. I sold half of it on Friday because I just want to lighten up a little bit more. So I've been like 36, 37% cash. I had bought a few other stocks, bought some FedEx. We know that. I bought some Western Digital. I was doing some lightening up on Friday, just a little bit of rebalancing in my overall longer term stuff. But I did lighten up some Alibaba there. It's trading down a buck here in the pre-market, 157.78. Still got a pretty sizable position in Alibaba. Just lighten it up a bit because I was uncomfortable with how big it was.
Textbook technicals, Dennis. We just got on Friday back near the highs of the rebound here. So, you know, anybody, long-term, short-term investor, you know, this is the area after that scary move in December. Now you're over halfway back still. So this is the area of resistance. But we got a guest coming on here. It's going to talk a little bit longer term about market. Spencer, who we got coming up here?
Craig Johnson. He is the managing director and technical market strategist at Piper Jaffray. So we'll be right back in a moment with Mr. Johnson. And as promised, we are back with Craig Johnson, managing director, technical market strategist at Piper Jaffray. Craig, how's it going on this Monday?
I'm doing fantastic. We got a little winter wonderland here in Minnesota, which we're happy to always see, and it'll be nice and brisk and cold. But
what's the temp? Overall, what's the temp there?
With wind chill, probably about 10 below zero.
Oh, wow. Okay. Whoa. But
8 inches of snow.
Oh, man. We're supposed to be coming our way. They already called off school, but the pre-market prep show goes on here. Craig, just want to talk to you about the technicals and the internals in the market. Our show focuses a lot more on the day-to-day price action, you know, the activity, ratings, earnings reports here. But there's internals in the market that the guys like you look at. And give us a quick snapshot here. What we're looking at in the market today.
Yeah, so what we're looking at in the market today is the internals really got very washed out as we came into the end of 2018. In fact, one of the internal indicators we look at is something we call our 40-week technique. And that is a chart where we basically measure how many of our groups are above or below a rising or falling 40-week moving average. Okay, so when we go through this, we look at the entire market and put it all together. What we found over time is that when we get very, very low readings, single digit type readings, this is an indicator to us to step back and ask ourselves some very simple questions. Is this another 08, 09 financial crisis again? Is this another 87 in the making? Is this another 73, 74? And when I go back and I look at this indicator, it's done a very nice job for us, as it did in December, for us to say, hey, we got to step back and we got to be putting some exposure back into markets. Did a great job this last time around and still unfolding. Did a great job in 2016 and also in 2011. And this indicator rarely goes to zero. It went to zero in 2008 and 9, of course. But as long as you're not another financial crisis, this is where you want to end up buying stocks. And with most investors right now, I got to tell you, they're all looking for this double bottom retest. I'm not sure you're going to get it. And I think the pain trade, in fact, is actually up based upon the improving internals of what I'm seeing in the market today.
Okay, so you're looking at this rebound. We had basically the 600 sell-off in the S&Ps here. We cleared a little, almost half of that, a little bit more than half of it back. You know, what's going to be, you know, the driver? I mean, we've had, you know, some good earnings reports, some bad earnings reports. What catalyst are you looking to, you know, to confirm this? And then give us a technical level on the S&P 500 where, you know, you feel confirmation that we're going back up to test all-time highs.
Right. So multiple questions inside of that. So right now, I feel like what we had seen happening through the fourth quarter was really a reset to growth. And when we go through and we start kind of tearing that all apart and you start looking at the reset that had happened in the earnings season that's now being reported, we had noted in our morning notes today that so far for this earnings season, we've had about 113 stocks have reported, 73% have topped their Q4 earnings coming into this. But I got to tell you, the reaction post the earnings announcement has been much stronger than what we had seen in Q3. And I really think that's because the bar had already been reset coming into this earnings reporting season. So that's one thing that we're watching, is we're continuing to watch the print and the reaction of the stock coming out of these earnings season. And they seem like they're doing quite well. Again, the 1 day move post an earnings print has been a little over 1%. So again, I think that's a good sign that confidence is rebuilding. Now, your other question is, what levels are we ultimately watching? Well, I think the key level to watch right now on the S&P 500 is really the downtrend resistance line off of the October 2008 highs. And right now, the S&P 500 is basically sitting right on top of that. So if we can get a close above about 2670, 2675, you're going to start to reverse that longer-term downtrend. And I think that's going to pull more investors back into the market to have further confidence that this is not just another relief rally back to the downtrend, but technically something has changed. And that, I think, will again get the market to push higher back toward the 200-day moving average at about 2741. And I think that'll happen, I think, quicker than I think a lot of people think.
We're on the line with Craig Johnson, Managing Director, Technical Market Strategist at Piper Jaffray. Craig was kind enough to send us over some charts this morning to take a look at. And let's start with you got a few charts here that you've labeled as attractive or strong stocks. And I noticed that you had Amgen on there. Could you talk to us about the Amgen chart we're looking at?
Yeah, so what we've been looking at with Amgen is Amgen's longer-term trend continues to be in a pretty well-defined uptrend. And as I look at this particular chart, and I think about the longer-term uptrend, what we've been experiencing over the last month or two has really been a kind of a sideways consolidation in the context of a longer-term uptrend. And what I'm suggesting to people is if we want, we should be buying this little dip, this little pullback, back toward the now rising 50-day or even 200-day moving average. And as we do, I think we got an interesting trade back up toward perhaps 208, 209 from that perspective. But again, nice longer-term uptrend with this name.
All right, Todd, let's move into the oil sector here. Oil equipment and services, crude obviously had its big drop from the mid-70s in the lower 40s and now starting to rebound. But you have an oil stock here on your radar, Tetra Technologies, TTI. Tell us what you're seeing here in this issue.
Sure. And before I go into that, just one quick thing on the overall crude oil price. When you look at the crude oil price right now, you can see that you've got potentially some sort of shorter term inverted head and shoulders potentially here in the making. And I wouldn't be surprised to see crude oil prices pull back toward about $50. I will tell you that $50 is going to be a very important level to watch on crude oil. And break below that is going to kind of suggest that the shakeout isn't done. If we do hold it, it's going to look like a right shoulder and we're going to want to be playing that. Now, in terms of Tetra Technologies, this is a stock that was discussed by our fundamental analysts on our morning call. My job is always to come in and kind of show and portray the charts as to what they look like and try to find that kind of stars and moon alignment here. And what we were looking at here with Tetra Tech was the stock has already had kind of a very large V-shaped sell-off. It started to get back above the lows you had seen in 2017. And it looks like this relief rally here has got room to perhaps carry on further, maybe back toward the old highs, which would put this, back to the April lows would be kind of a next resistance area for the stock, which would be a little under $3.50 from here.
All right, on your weak-looking charts here, and what a volatile sector here, post-secondary education is, but you have a chart and some analysis on Grand Canyon Education, LOPE. What are you looking for in this one?
Yeah, as I look at Grand Canyon, so again, this was again another name discussed on our morning call. Peter Appert, he's got a great hot hand in terms of picking right stocks from a fundamental perspective. And what I'm noticing here is he likes it fundamentally. The stock has obviously had a very large sell-off and is now just consolidating sideways. So whenever I see this negative news and then this kind of sideways consolidation, it sets up to be more interesting. Also, from a technical perspective, I will tell you that the stock got very oversold at the end of December. The money flow metrics, looking at some of the money flow indicators that we have, are starting to improve and almost turn positive. It feels like you got kind of a trading low that's been put in place in that name.
All right. Consolidations, I mean, that's a really important point you brought up there. After stocks have big moves, whether up or down, and you get that period of consolidation, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 days, just digesting the move and it going in with the trend, if you're a trend follower and it's been up, continue with the trend higher. But consolidation periods are boring on the charts and maybe you don't trade them, but very interesting in the long term. We got to talk about the biggest stock, well, probably one of the most widely followed ones you have on here. Amazon had peeled back along with the rest of the market here, trying to find some support just under, it did just under 1400. I know coming into earnings, it can be volatile as well, but break down your technical setup here in Amazon.
Yeah, so I mean, the set down for us is, or the setup is really, for us, it's simply this. I go back and I look at the longer term chart first and foremost, and that's where I always like to start. I like to start with either a weekly or a monthly chart going back 5 years and 10 years and try to determine that longer term trend to start out with. And what I've been seeing is that the uptrend off of the lows we had seen in 2015, to me, still looks like it's essentially intact. We had come back, we had retested the lows back in 2018, back in that April, March timeframe, we've held them. And now we're at a point in time where the stock is not wanting to move back above its rising 200-day moving average until we get the earnings print. And earnings are going to be out on this stock in 3 days. And as I look at this, if it's a decent print, holds up well, we're going to see a break back above its 200-day moving average for the first time since early December. And I think at that point in time, there is a pretty easy move back toward about 1,800 here on this stock. And from my perspective, money flows coming into it. I want to come into this print on the long side, just what I'm seeing here on the charts and the money flow for Amazon.
All right, let's just cover two more before we let you go here. Bottom fishing candidate here, Houghton Mifflin Hardcore Book Publishing. I know I'm still reading books here. What do you like? Do you like the rounding bottom? You like the rounding bottom here in this chart, or tell us what does caught your attention in HMHC?
So what's caught my attention with this is a couple things. So I always like to blend technicals, and I like to blend some of the fundamentals together. And what's caught my attention on this is this big long-term downtrend that's been intact since 2015. We reversed that longer-term downtrend in late 2018, and now we're putting in a series of higher highs, higher lows. The moving averages for the 50 and 200-day are moving higher. I'll tell you that the street is split. Three buys, three holds, one sell. And it just feels like to me that something is changing here with the story. Earnings are coming up in 24 days, but I'd like this big longer-term downtrend reversal. I'd call it a bottom fishing candidate, and I'm encouraged by the money flow that's been coming into the stock too.
All right, and one chart looks very interesting to me. NXP Semiconductors, NXPI, the symbol. Can't remember. Was it Qualcomm that wanted to pay 120 bones for this thing? And then, complication with China. That deal fell apart here. It's fallen all the way to 70. Back on the rebound. Tell us what you see here in the charts, Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, so what I see here is something that I'm seeing not only in NXPI, but I'm seeing in a lot of other semiconductor stocks. This stock has already made a double bottom low. And I called this out on our morning call today with our sales folks, is that you made your first low at the end of October. You made your second low in the end of December. You had a two-month double bottom low made, and this stock is starting to now press up against what is a meaningful had-been support, is now going to be resistance at about 86 and change. And any sort of close back above this is going to leave your next resistance at about 92, where you have your downward sloping 200-day moving average. So with a lot of investors, the bet is coming down to the lows have been made. You've already retested them. In any deal that gets done on trade, and these semiconductor stocks are going to be the biggest beneficiary out of the off of that announcement. So I like the setup we're seeing here with this stock. And I'd say at minimum, you got to move back to 92 at minimum from my perspective.
We've been on the line with Craig Johnson, Managing Director, Technical Analyst, Strategist at Piper Jaffray. Broke down a lot of stocks for us, good and bad, Craig. We really appreciate it. Stay warm there, and we'll be tracking you down soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right, S&P's no bounce yet here, trading on the lows of the session, down 17 handles at 46.5, 46 even. Marks your pre-market low. Triple D, how you doing out there?
Yeah, just looking. Interesting, you look at the semi charts, and I agree. I think the bottom is in the semis. I've said that too. I mean, but now, the problem is the stocks are so significantly off those bottoms. But you can see what happens. Western Digital, obviously chip stock comes in and actually doesn't even report great numbers, and they squeeze the hell out of the shorts. So, Applied Materials had a huge move, in the last. So the question is, the bottom is probably in, and I'd probably be a buyer of pullbacks on some of these stocks, but do I want to chase them? I'm not sure. I did buy NVIDIA. I did chase this to a certain extent because I don't think you're going to get a shot back at the 130s. Obviously, nice day for it on Friday. When we talked on the show, I believe when I was on Friday of AMD, I mean, the stock has had the nice consolidation. The Friday bar looks great. I was saying I think this could make a run for that high of the move, which is 2375. I still think that's on the table. It's 2 points up from here, but I think that's where, you know, it could be making a run for us. So I do like the semis. I would be a buyer on pullbacks. I just don't know if I want to chase, but you're getting a little pullback in some of them this morning. So AMD down a little bit, NVIDIA down a couple bucks. I mean, it's what area you look at.
Okay. All right. AMD has earnings out after the close tomorrow. So that had a nice breakout through 21.
Yeah, I like the setup for that. Yeah, you're right. Great point. I'm not saying I don't like holding trades through, but, you know, it sets up well for, you know, maybe a little 2-day move ahead of the report here too. You got today's trading and tomorrow's trading before reports tomorrow night. A little pullback here this morning with the overall market. This is a stock, I'm going to write it down. This is a stock that, you know, I maybe would look to strike for a 2-day move.
Yeah.
Ahead of the end, selling it before, you know, the 359 Tuesday.
Yeah, it took a while for it to catch the rally on Friday, but eventually cleared 21, got into the 22 handle, peeling back a little bit today. With all this cold weather and everything, people are always probably asking about natural gas. Alan Blake is asking about that, about D-gas and U-gas. I'm just looking at the natural gas futures, and they're not really too worried about this cold snap here. We had a couple big rally earlier in the year that dissipated, came back, rallied again. You got an area of major support here. Let's call it the 280 level. You're trading just off that. So I'm thinking if this cold, you know, the cold weather we have hasn't got this thing off the mat yet, I don't know what will, but lower the move, lower the year right here comes in at 2.777. So if you're leaning on that, that would probably be a stop out point on the long.
Well, it's getting ahead hard this morning. I mean, it's down 6%. So, yeah. And I just look, and I know everybody likes to trade the D-gas and, you know, the levered products there. I hate the levered products. We know I'm not a big fan of them at all to trade them. My own trading preferences there, but I think, you know, there's obviously other issues there we've talked about with the way they're structured. But in any regard here, if you're trading UNG, 25.69, it's down 6% here today, so it's getting hit. I don't know. You got the coldest weather coming to Michigan here in the last, you know, so they're obviously anticipating that it's going to last.
Yeah.
But today, where we are in Detroit, Windsor area, you know, they're anticipating 6 to 8 inches of snow, and I believe they're saying it could get, with the wind chill, I heard tomorrow night, I think it is, as much as minus 40. Did you hear that with the wind chill?
I didn't hear that. Minus 40, come on. I didn't hear that.
I heard minus 40 with the wind chill was the potential to get down to. It's either Tuesday or Wednesday night. It's supposed to get down to like 16 or minus 17 on the actual, like, and then with the wind chill.
I got Brent.
I read that article on the weekend. So it's supposed to maybe potentially set some record lows.
Brent.
So cold. But obviously, they don't care about the natural gas here. So maybe it's going to be some warm weather coming behind that.
Brent is Benzinga's resident meteorologist, and he is confirming the minus 40 degree forecast. So
he confirmed it?
With the wind chill. He is the meteorologist at Benzinga.
What day, so, Brentster? What day is that?
He wants to know what day, Brent.
Look at my parka.
He says Wednesday.
Minus 40. Have we ever seen that? Has that ever been with the wind chill in Detroit? I don't think it's
been. I don't think so.
Have you ever felt minus 40? What's that feel like? You people in the chat who are like from the north, what does minus 40 feel like? I don't think I've ever felt it before.
Who in the chat is more north than you?
Come on. I'm further south than you are.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, Dennis. I mean,
Windsor south of Detroit.
Dennis, that's true. Tell us what it's like in the Gulag. I mean, is it like 85% of Canada, like ice and tundra?
Yeah, we have our snow dogs, you know, that pull us around. You know, we're in the wintertime and nobody has cars. And oh, yes, of course, Joel.
All right, let's just talk here. X, and we do have some steel reporting this week. Don't look now, but X has been on a nice comeback here. Made a low of the move around with the market at 1836, and now you're bumping up.
Life.
I, I don't know what's got into the steel market.
The market, everything. They all look the same. We've just rallied significantly on the market. And you know what? I agree with the last guest, too, is I don't know if you're going to get a shot at the double bottoms on any of this stuff here. So I think I'm a buyer of the pullbacks on everything before. You know, if people are sitting around waiting for, you know, us to retest those December 24th lows, I think they could be waiting a long time, too. I don't think you're going to get a shot either. I think we got a V-bottom happening here. A lot of people caught, and you know, and me too. I'm caught with a little bit too much cash too in my overall long-term investment portfolio. So, you know, there's definitely going to be, you know, opportunity still, but I'm going to get an opportunity down those December 24th lows. So if you're looking at U.S. steel, think I'm going to get a shot at 1617 again? I'm not sure you are. I think if I was looking at this, I'd be maybe striking in the lower 20s, but it's gearing up. It looks like it's ready to break out again. So maybe you just chase it a bit. I don't like chasing, but Morgan Stanley upgrading it this morning. You know, as you know, a trade here. Momentum is for the bulls here on X.
I would just look at the upside here. If you're looking for a potential target, shorter term target for today, I don't see why the double top at 2238 and 2247 can't come into play. Those are your highs from December 6th and December 7th. I'd love to see a close over 22 as well. I haven't closed over 22 since December 6th when you had that 2201 close. So keep an eye. This is called 2250 for the next level in X. Dennis, ratings besides all the Johnny Come Lately downgrades and Vail, any other ratings sticking out to you?
I saw Grubhub getting upgraded Credit Suisse. That was significant. SWKS getting some love over at B. Riley. Zynga, I own that in my investment portfolio. That is getting upgraded at
KeyBank,
I think.
KeyBank.
Yeah, and then Bank of Montreal, I also own that in my investment portfolio. My wife worked there for a long time. I still have some shares there from when she worked there on the employee stock purchase plan. Bank of Montreal downgrade a sell at Bank of Montreal, or underperform, they call it. So those are the ones really standing out. You see anything else, Mr. Spencer, Israel?
Yes, I do. I see Logitech upgrade at Goldman Sachs to buy. Wayfair upgraded Credit Suisse to outperform. There was one more that caught my eye. No, you mentioned the big ones there. Sonos upgraded Morgan Stanley to overweight there. And then as far as downgrades are concerned, you mentioned Bank of Montreal, and we talked about Vail, AK Steel. So Morgan Stanley has the pair trade on this morning, upgrading U.S. Steel, downgrading AK Steel to neutral. That's really it as far as notable downgrades. Not a ton, mostly just the Vail downgrades from they've got a half dozen or so this morning, and as expected with the news over the weekend. But that'll do it for our show today. So if you missed
it. Just for spice, I said Bank of Montreal downgrade by Bank of Montreal. That would be a whoopsie if I said that. Bank of Montreal downgrade by Bank of America.
Correct.
So yeah, downgrade to I'm not sure if I said that wrong. So you get stuff in your head and maybe it doesn't come out right. So that.
And before you wrap, Spencer, Dennis and I are going to be continuing coverage here with Jeremy Newsom on Real Life Trading. Dennis will be getting through the open. I'm going to be joining Jeremy here just after we hang up. Jeremy is a colorful trader. He's going to have a lot of setups for it to work at this morning. And then Triple D will come in after his open and give us the good, bad, and the ugly.
And that's at reallifetrading.com, just to get that out there for listeners. But if you missed any part of our show, you can catch our podcast. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play, or just rewatch us on YouTube. Thanks to our guest, Craig Johnson. Thanks, as always, to all of you in both of our chat rooms on YouTube and premarket.benzinga.com. Please remember, all the information from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. Hope you all had a good weekend. Hope you have a good rest of your Monday, and hope you stay warm and join us again on Tuesday.